podcast uses profanity and topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listen at your own risk. Welcome back to Hell on Heels podcast. I'm Bryce.
I'm Amanda.
And I promise I'm not beating a child.
I don't know.
I'm gently patting him, but I can already tell you it's picking up the padding on his back.
I can hear it when you talk, yeah.
See, what? I'm not beating him up, even though he might deserve it tonight. He might deserve to be beaten up. Have his little butt kicked.
Does he?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You'll well, that solves that.
He's the only one here. Cody and Leo went to Lowe's, and he stayed.
Y'all are dividing and conquering.
No, you're dividing for him to go. He just wasn't allowing me to be separated from him.
Ah.
So, mama's boy here. But anyways, the mama's boy, no matter how cute he is going to get his trash kicked. Anyways, how are you?
I'm good. Still sick. I'm still half sick. So the E. coli, gone. She's out of here. Kicked her to the curb. Trash is going to pick her up next week. The C. diff, well, that one hung around.
You know what? Your body said one at a time, okay?
Yeah. I guess so. That's what it is. I'm always yelling that at Annie when she's shoveling multiple things in her mouth at once. Yeah, so that's what it is. But I'm now on my second medicine, which is the one the doctor wanted me to put me on the first time. And the insurance is like, no, we're not going to pay for that. Well, joke's on you, because yes,
you're going to pay for that.
Yeah, if you had to pay for it the first time, you probably wouldn't be, you wouldn't have had to pay for the other one. So,
yeah, save yourself a little bit of money.
Yeah, this is America. Stay sick and you'll get your medicine when we feel like it. So,
yeah. Huh. Well, I have an update now that we're on that stay sick.
Okay. Yes. I want to hear it.
I've already told you a little bit, but I took JJ to a chiropractor. Mm-hmm. First of all, we took him to a gastro. And Cody and I walked out of the gastro going, that was not helpful at all. Like, nothing beneficial came from that.
Okay. I'm sorry to hear that.
Very frustrated. But we go to the chiropractor, and we felt so good leaving there. Like, they haven't adjusted him yet. Mm-hmm. Because this chiropractor, they're very much, like, holistic. Like, they're like, your body is built to fix itself. Right? So, you're not, like, medicine is not...
I would like to introduce them. To my body, but
they're not talking about you, okay? They're talking about everyone else.
My body is actively destroying itself, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway.
They might say you're the one-off. We weren't talking about you. Okay.
Get out of here. You're ruining our reputation.
The majority of people, their bodies are meant to heal themselves. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of explained, like, we're very much holistic healing, and we want to make sure like what we're doing is gonna be beneficial in the long term. And so it was only a consultation we did, right? So there was no adjustments, nothing like that. But she went through, it was like, we were with her for like an hour, hour and a half, something like that. And she looked at JJ's reflexes, his growth. And like, there were things that she was like, can you already see? Like, he's churning this way, way easier than he's churning the other way. And she's like, that's not normal. And we're like, well, we didn't think it was normal.
Yeah.
And then she looked at their mouths a little bit. She's not a dentist. And she said, I want, like, they're going to have to go see a specialist for this. She thinks they have a tongue tie and Leo has a lip tie. Which, if JJ has a tongue tie, that would make sense as to why he's having such a hard time keeping food down.
Yeah. Or, yeah, well, yeah, also that.
He doesn't have a hard time latching. He's just keeping food down. Yeah. Because it's
introducing much
air.
That's what I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to affect their swallowing.
Mm-hmm. So we already have a dentist appointment scheduled for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, I have gone to our pediatrician multiple times, now a gastro, and it took a chiropractor to say it's possibly tongue tie, take him to a dentist. And she's not saying that's the only thing. She said there's other things that we'll work on, but she said, from my experience, if you fix those tongue ties or the lip ties, the chiropractic work we do tends to work faster and better.
That's wild, because I remember, like, they thought Annie had one, and that was the first. But really, it was because she, homie, is just, what's the word? Voracious, I think. She didn't have a tongue tie or a lip tie. She was just rude and aggressive. But that was the first thing they said. They're like, okay, we need to check for this. I don't know what that is. Sure, go ahead. Go for it. And they looked at her and they were like, no, she's just aggressive. Like, well, yeah, thanks. I know that.
You're like, she is my child.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I'll keep you updated on chiropractor appointments. I'm hoping, I do kind of hope it's a tongue tie, because that would make so much sense why he's spitting up so much.
Yeah. And that would be, I mean, I imagine it maybe sort of an easy fix.
They have to like laser it. I don't know. Oof.
Yeah.
But they don't cut it, because if they cut it and then like sew, it can grow back how it was. So they laser it.
Okay.
So they're both, and she was so nice. She was like, I know Leo's not actually here to be seen today. Because I told the office, like, I just want JJ seen right away. Like, I want to get him in as soon as possible. And they basically said, okay, well, this is when we can do it. So they're separated, which isn't a big deal.
Yeah.
But she looked at Leo to see if she thinks he has a lip tie. She said, I'm pressing ever so gently on his upper lip and he's curling back. And that's most likely a lip tie. But she also said, I'm also not a dentist. I'm not a professional. You might take them in and they say, no, those aren't tongue ties or lip ties.
Yeah.
So.
Well, anyway, she sounds great. I love her. I like that wonderful. She validated y'all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we felt so much better leaving. I was like, why in the hell did we even go to the gastro?
Yeah.
Like they made us feel like there was no reason for us to be there, that we were overreacting, even though he's not, like, the gastro doctor, she made it seem like she was talking like, oh, I don't know why he's here, until she looked at his weight and his growth. And she was like, oh, well, I guess, yeah, that makes sense. But I still don't know what to do for you.
Man, we were just sent here.
Yeah, I didn't choose to come here.
Yeah.
Trust me, I don't want to be here.
I've had bad gastros. So I'm sorry that you had to go through that. Well, I've had bad gastro. I've had one, luckily, but I've only had three within two states. So, but I'm sorry, because that sucks. Anytime you have a bad doctor, that sucks. This is America. I'm not here for my, like, oh, well, I mean, I guess I am for my health, but I'm not here because I want to be.
Right.
I don't, yeah.
But my whole thing with it was, I very much felt like she's like, I don't know why, and I don't care to find out why he's spitting up. That was the attitude I felt like I got.
Then again, why are we here? Why did you even make, why did your office make the appointment?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm mad for you.
Yeah.
You should write your congressman. I don't know.
I don't think that helps. And I mean, I get it. I get that she told us to give him thickener.
Mm-hmm.
But she also said give him thickener, but also know that this can cause NEC, which is like necrotizing something. It's like pretty dangerous.
The thickener?
Yeah.
Great. Thanks. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Yep.
So
here, this might fix your problem. It might make it worse.
Yeah, so I basically I'm using the thickener, not because I want to, because I have to, but I'm definitely not using, like, it says 2 scoops to 4 ounces. Mm-hmm. I'm, like, using 1 scoop to 4 ounces, because I'm like, absolutely not. And he's gaining weight. So. Okay,
so it is helping.
Yeah, but I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I gotta put my boob away, hold on. He's asleep, so this is gonna be
I can tell, he is gone. So I told you, I'm still sick. Lee is also sick. So that poor boy.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to make a comment. When aren't you sick?
I don't think ever. Like, I took him to the doctor because I got a text message and the daycare sent me like a picture of where they took his temperature. And anytime they have a temperature, I'm like, oh, crap. But she sent me this temperature and it was 102.3, and I was like, oh god, that's like a fever. So of course we're shorthanded at work. We got a guy out because they just had a baby, congratulations to them. And then there was another one of my coworkers that was on lunch. So I had to wait for him to come back. And by that time, like, my phone wouldn't quit ringing. Eventually, I was able to leave and go get him. And while I was at work, James was able to step away because he doesn't work with phones. And he got him a doctor's appointment for that day. And that doctor was awesome. He was so nice and so personable. Not our normal doctor, but I basically told him, I was like, okay, this is what I'm afraid it could be. I have this. And he's like, oh, that's horrible. And I'm like, well, I have ulcerative colitis, so it's no big deal. And he's like, oh, that's also horrible. And I'm like, yeah, but I make poop jokes, so it's okay.
You're like, and it evens out.
Yeah, like, I can make, it's fine. I was like, okay, so I'm afraid of this. And he's like, well, it's not that, because he hasn't been puking. I'm like, okay, cool. Next thing I'm afraid of, salmonella. And he just kind of looked at me. And I'm like, okay, so we had an egg incident where, and I think I sent you a picture of this, didn't I?
Oh, yeah. The aftermath? We discussed it because I said something about Humpty Dumpty.
Yes, I need to, oh, yes, I need to do that. So I have to use my own bathrooms, and it's the bathroom away from the rest of the house. It's in our bedroom. So I'm gone, Bryce, for like 4 minutes, okay? Use the bathroom, wash my hands. I come back into the kitchen. There's 3 eggs broken on the floor. Annie was having a blast. She's in the fridge. And Lee is sitting on the floor trying to pick up the yolks and eat them. I lose it. I panic. By the way, that new anxiety medicine you asked me about, yes, it still works. I am not overly medicated, however. And that is when I discovered this. So... yes, I was very upset, very angry, very scared. But also, he's like, you're fine. He's not vomiting. He's not having diarrhea. I'm like, okay, cool. So yeah, he's got something viral. And I went back to work today. James stayed home with him. And I just sent you a picture of what James sent me around lunchtime. Is that not the most pitiful thing you've ever seen?
Oh, he's just... so pitiful. He does look like he doesn't feel very good.
Poor boy. He's just like in his high chair. James couldn't get him to eat any solid food. He was able to get him to eat some baby food. His eyes are barely open. Like,
his eyes look darker than they should. Like, they look almost black.
He just feels so bad. He's slept like, I think he had about 4 or 5 naps, because he was up like an hour when I got home, and then I put him right back to sleep. He was tired again, so hopefully he kicks this thing.
Yeah,
poor guy. He's asleep, cuddling his stingray stuffy in his crib right now.
I think that's all that matters. Let him sleep. He'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're half sick, half healthy over here. Let's see how that goes.
But aren't you always half sick, half healthy?
Oh, no, not me, the household. I mean, no, we're 2-2. No, I meant the
household.
Oh. I mean, I'm just always sick.
You're always sick, but then I feel like one of the other ones is always sick, too.
I mean, that's what it's like with kids. Give it time. You'll get it.
Well, no, because I've already accepted they're going to be sick at the same time.
If you're lucky, they could be sick one after the other, like usually what happens here.
I just feel like because they're in each other's faces 24/7, and they'll probably be going everywhere, the same places too. Like, it's not like Annie and Lee are together 24/7 at daycare.
Right. Yeah.
They would be. You know, okay. So like they good would, point. They're more likely to get it from the source versus one another.
Yes. Okay.
Though I'm sure it's going to be one after another too, though.
I hope it's not.
I hope.
Let's just knock it out at the same time. Like, that's how you got them.
You guys hear that? That's how I got you guys.
Yeah.
Which I was telling Cody, I'm like, you know what? Pregnancy sucked, but these two are worth it. I'm still never doing it again.
No. 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 No.
And then he said, we'll see. And I said, absolutely not.
Who's going to see?
I'm not going to see.
I have a say in this.
You're not going to see shit. Because these two, we're done. You're lucky to have two.
What, do you want to risk two again? Out of your mind.
Something I'm just really excited for. Tomorrow, my IVF doctor is doing like a get-together for his... I don't know if it's just IVF parents or just success. I don't know. For his patients.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
It was in celebration of their 1,000th baby for the clinic.
What number was Leo and JJ?
They had to have been like 9-something.
Yeah. Were they one or they have to be two, right? Like they count. They're individuals.
Yeah, they're individuals.
Okay.
Yeah, because they were counting babies, not pregnancies.
Gotcha. Okay. That's pretty cool. It would be cool if you went and, like, it would be cool to see how many multiples there are.
There's actually a place I can think, if they've been reviewed and stuff, I can look up their statistics to see how many multiples.
Ah, interesting. I think that's interesting.
I'd have to look it up and see if it shows. I'm pretty sure it does. But, like, my friend, she also went to him. So she's going to go. Cody has to work, so I don't know if he's going to be able to go.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to go, and I told her little boy, I'm like, Everett, I'm going to need help.
Is he down to help?
Oh, yeah, he loves. They came over not too long ago, and he just held Leo. He was, like, so happy to just sit and hold him.
Oh, does he have siblings?
Yeah, he has. She has two little boys, both IVF, the same doctor, so. But, yeah, I just wanted to show that I'm excited for that. I'm also really excited that he fell asleep. Anyway,
I'm knocking on my desk.
Any other updates on your end with everyone being sick?
No, not as of yet. Hopefully it stays that way. Unless somebody wants to get healthy, that would be great too.
You know, if you could just do that for us, Amanda, that would be the miracle we're all waiting for.
Well, don't hold your breath.
I wouldn't have done that. I know. Those odds are against me. All right. Well, are you ready to talk about some socials?
Yeah, let's go.
We've got them. So we've got Facebook, Instagram, Hill and Hills Podcast, Instagram. I already said Instagram. What's the one? X, the naughty one?
Oh.
Not naughty. I just always think it is. X, Hill and Hills Pod. We post all of the pictures that we refer to in our episodes on there. And then we also have Discord up and going. We have our Patreon up and going, Linktree, all the fun things. We also have our email, hellandheelspodcast@gmail.com. If you are struggling to find anything, whether it's email, Instagram, whatever it is, just Google Hell and Heels Podcast Linktree, and it will have the link for everything.
Yep.
And then if you do enjoy listening to us, make sure to tell your friends, family, whoever to listen as well, so we can continue to create stories, not create. To tell you guys stories and to create these episodes. Man, it's been a day for me. Anyway, so we can continue doing this shit is what I'm saying, okay?
There you go.
It came out eventually. All right, are you ready then for a story?
Yes.
Why was there hesitancy?
Because I don't like his eyes.
Do you like anyone's eyes?
Not my kids are all right.
Still debating that. But we are going to talk about Michael J. Devlin. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
Okay. Well, Michael John Devlin, he was born on November 19th, 1965. And he was actually adopted by a large family. So he had three adopted brothers, two sisters. I don't believe they were adopted. So in total, four, including him, four adopted children.
Oof, okay, that is a big family.
Yeah, he was raised in Webster Groves, Missouri. From what I could find, pretty normal upbringing, nothing too significant in his past. His friends would actually describe him in his early life as very outgoing and friendly. And as he got older, he grew into adulthood and some things changed, specifically that he was diagnosed with diabetes. After his diagnosis, he became more reserved and a much quieter person. From what I could find, his diabetes would get so bad that he would actually have to have two toes amputated from complications in 2002.
Oh my gosh. And he was how old?
At that time, he would have been 37-ish.
I feel like that's young.
Yeah. Yep. So not the best thing for him. Not great for his mental health.
Yeah.
But I don't really care. He can have less toes for all I care.
Okay.
On October 6, 2002, Sean Hornbeck, he was an 11-year-old. He was riding his bike He was riding his bike in Richwoods, Missouri, which is near his home, and he was on his way to his friend's house. And this is a route and a path that Hornbeck took countless times over to his friend's house. He, however, would not make it to his friend's house. Michael Devlin was driving on that road. He would bump into him with his vehicle, and Devlin would leave his truck, seeming concerned for Sean's safety. But that wouldn't last long, as Michael Devlin would then force him into his truck. Some said it was a van or truck. He was forced into the vehicle. Little Sean Hornbeck was forced into the vehicle. And reports say that he would tell Sean, quote, "You were just at the wrong place at the wrong time."
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't feel like Sean was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right.
I feel like he was in the wrong place. Michael Devlin was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Yeah. And the place is Earth.
Yeah. Do you see now why I was like, he can lose more toes? You don't need them? Okay. So Sean's parents, Pam, I spelled her last name wrong. I'm looking at this. Sorry. Pam, I would say Ackers, and his stepfather, Craig Ackers, they reported missing. Like, he had a good family life. His family very much loved him. So his mom and stepfather reported missing. Police search begins. They just didn't have anything. They had nothing to go off of. And it goes cold pretty quickly because no one saw anything. No one knew anything. So Devlin, he takes Sean back to his apartment, which is about 50 miles away. Some sources says 60 miles. I just Googled center of town to center of town. Okay.
Yeah.
And it was about 50 miles. And there Sean would endure the worst years of his life. Those are my words, not his, but I can't imagine they were good years. Michael Devlin would molest Sean over and over again. He would physically abuse him. He would threaten to murder Sean with his guns. He very much tortured this young boy. Oh. And Sean was forced to basically pose as Devlin's son to help stop any suspicion from neighbors, whoever it is. And so he's like, oh yeah, this is my son. Sean was so scared that he eventually, like, he's like, I'm not going to run away. Like, I'm not going to leave, not any of that, because he was so scared. And so he does get some freedoms and some, I hate calling them freedoms because it wasn't freedoms, but he does get some space.
Yeah.
Or some trust, I guess. Sources state that Sean had been given enough freedom that he was able to actually reach out to his parents. Now, this was on a website that was set up to receive tips about Sean's whereabouts. And he would write in using the alias Sean Devlin. And he would ask, quote, "How long are you planning to look for your son?"
God.
So keep in mind, this poor kid, he saw the news reports of himself and his family and everything. And he said it was so hard. A lot of times he said he wouldn't watch because it was so hard emotionally for him.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Like, so I can't imagine as an adult, but he's 10?
11.
11. Oh.
Yeah. He's just 11 years old. He's just a baby. Sean's parents, they are not deterred by the fact that they're getting nothing. They just continue their search for Sean, and they do set up the Sean Hornbeck Foundation, and this foundation was set up to help look for missing and abducted children. They put everything they had into this foundation and looking for Sean. All of their money, all of their retirement savings, everything. They spent everything they could to pay private investigators, to help aid police, whatever they could do to find Sean. They did it. Now, his parents, they end up appearing on the Montel Williams show to raise awareness of Sean's case. And while on the show, a self-proclaimed psychic would call in. Her name was Sylvia Brown. She would tell them that Sean was gone. He was dead. She would provide additional details about the case, and she would tell them that he was in a rocky forested area within 20 miles of the Hornbeck home. And for several weeks after that, they would search and reportedly focus on searching for his body in the described area. So, but I mean, there's no other lead. So they're going off of faith here. They have nothing. So I'm sure anything is just anything to give closure. Well, there were no leads until January 2007. Michael Devlin, he's I think we've already kind of established that he's a trashy person. You know what? Not a trashy person. He is trash.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Devlin had grown, quote, bored of Sean. At this point, it's been 4 years. Sean had essentially grown up too much for Devlin's taste. Yeah. So on January 8th, 2007, Michael Devlin would abduct 13-year-old Ben Ownby. Ben had been waiting at a school bus stop in Beaufort, about 50 miles from Kirkwood, where Devlin lived. Ben would be forced into a white pickup truck by Devlin, and they would peel away from the bus stop. This time, though, there was a witness.
Hell yeah.
A 15-year-old neighbor. I have him down as Mitchell Holtz. He had seen the abduction of Ben. He had seen Ben crying. He saw the truck zooming off. He was actually able to give police a detailed account of the truck. He told them, you know, this, it's a white truck. It's got the shell on it. All of these different details. Police at this point, they do quickly involve the FBI to help aid in their search as well. And the FBI was actually pretty quick to link the truck to Michael Devlin. So some sources claim that police saw the truck at the apartment complex where Michael Devlin lived when they were on the property to serve an unrelated arrest warrant. Other sources say someone called it in because they saw a matching truck in a pizza place parking lot. And so they were like, we got to call it in. Yeah. Either way, a tip takes the FBI to, most sources said it took them to the pizzeria in Kirkwood on January 12th, 2007. Now, this pizzeria, Michael Devlin was the manager. Or a manager. Not even the manager. He was a manager.
That just feels even more icky because I just imagine so many kids are going to be there.
I more think that he wasn't good enough to do anything and all he could do was work at a pizza shop. He wasn't even the manager. He was a manager and he's in his 40s. He's like 41 at this time. anyways, other sources will say they visited him at his home. So it's unclear where they actually went to visit him. But FBI pays him a visit. And it didn't actually take them long to pop him like a little weasel. Because he confessed. And he kept mentioning his godson, Sean. And at first, police are like, "What? Who? Oh, okay, Sean." They hadn't connected this to Sean Hornbeck. So when Devlin leads them to his apartment, they're kind of surprised to see Sean there in the sense that he's alive and he's healthy. The boys were actually in the apartment playing video games when they were found. And when they were found, they were described basically as dazed, but they were physically okay for the most
part. Okay. Which I imagine, you know, like living this life for so many years and then suddenly there's police and investigators in your house. Mm-hmm. Dazed feels about right.
Mm-hmm. Well, keep in mind, Ben Ownby had only been gone for 4 days at this point. Now, unfortunately, he had been molested and not great things. Mm-hmm. So police go in, they save the boys. And the finding of these two boys where they are alive and healthy, it's basically dubbed the Missouri Miracle. Because it really was a miracle that Sean was alive after 4 years of having been missing. Because he was gone for 4 years. So that psychic that we talked about, Sylvia Brown, she was wrong about everything for Sean. And I am calling her out because there are reports that state she has also given false details about at least one other person's disappearance. Right. So she's not a good psychic. Or she's a troll. Like, I feel like that's dirty. People are grieving a missing family member, loved one, whoever. And you're going to give them false details?
Yeah. Like, even if it's false hope, it's false.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, like, don't string people along with stuff like that.
Yep. I just struggled with that because I was like, look, it's not that I don't think there aren't people that have some sort of sixth sense, but she clearly does not when it comes to these cases, at least. So
yeah,
anyways, so Devlin, he is originally charged with one count of kidnapping from Franklin County, one count of kidnapping and armed criminal action in Washington County, because he's across county lines. Mm-hmm. On January 18th, 2007, he would plead not guilty to these charges. Oh, I'm sorry. So one count of kidnapping and armed criminal action in Washington County.
Okay.
So on January 18th, 2007, he pleads not guilty. The prosecutors, however, are able to have him held on $1 million cash only bail. And it's because he confessed. He's already confessed. Then on February 5th, 71 new felony charges were added to the existing charges. So 18 counts for, I assume this is for Ben. It didn't list who it was for each person, but 18 counts, I assume, for Ben Ownby. One count for kidnapping, 17 counts for forcible sodomy. The other 53, I assume, were for Sean Hornbeck. One for kidnapping and 52 for forcible sodomy. Each of these counts is a felony and each carried a possibility of a life in prison. So that's a lot of lifetimes in prison.
I hope he got charged for every single one of them. I don't care if he can only serve technically one. Give him 62 life sentences. I don't give a hell.
Oh, you mean convicted, not charged? Because I was like, he was charged with all of those.
He's
not
yes, I'm sorry. Convicted. Yeah. Okay. Convict him for all of them.
Yep. So on February 6th, Devlin's attorneys, they would have a motion for a gag order against the New York Post and the specific reporter, Suzanne Callahan. Callahan. They have their motion for this gag order denied on February 6th.
Good.
Good. I literally have in my notes, suckers. Anyways, so they're denied also a motion for, they had a motion for Susanna to turn over her notes to the attorneys, and that was also denied.
Also and good.
Then, right. And then they were either denied or just refused, the judge refused to hear the two other requests from Devlin's attorneys. But there were two other requests that they were like, either deny or we don't want to hear it. It's not clear. On February 28th, a felony indictment would charge Devlin with one count of child kidnapping and one count of armed criminal action because he allegedly used a weapon in the kidnapping of Ben Ownby. Then on March 1st, Devlin was charged with four counts of producing child pornography and two counts of transporting a minor across state lines to engage in sexual activity in Illinois.
Okay.
Then on it's April... Like,
every time I think it can't get worse, you just keep talking. It just keeps getting worse.
It does. This case is a pretty straightforward in the sense of, like, yes, it took 4 years, but once you found Sean Hornbeck, it was like, Michael Devlin, you fucked it up yourself.
Yeah.
So anyways, on April 16th, there are additional charges added again. Attempted murder, kidnapping, armed criminal action, three more counts of forcible sodomy, one account of attempted forcible sodomy. Now, keep in mind that all of these charges are against four different jurisdictions. Like, you've got federal level, you've got their different counties. Like, these are charges from different places. Eventually, Devlin, he would plead guilty to all counts. He reportedly admit that Sean was, in fact, getting too old for him, and that's why he abducted Ben. Sean was 14, 15. October 6, 2007, he would plead guilty to all charges across all four jurisdictions. And his sentencing would begin on October 8th in Franklin County, and sentencing would officially end on December 21st for the final jurisdiction. Now, sources are conflicting here. He was either sentenced to 72 or 74 life term. So 74 life sentences.
Oh, cool. Okay, I got what I asked for.
Mm-hmm. From what I could find, you know what? I did miss a whole ass bullet here. So total of what we're looking at. If I counted correctly, there are 80 counts of sexual assault, so like the different sodomy charges, four counts of the child pornography, three counts of kidnapping from different jurisdictions, and attempted murder. So those were all the charges. He is sentenced to 72 to 74 life terms.
Attempted murder?
Yeah, they added that one on April 16th. You must not have heard it.
I think I it got lost in the couple of, you know, few other charges he had.
Like, he has a lot, yeah.
This guy is inhuman.
I already said he's trash.
He's disgusting.
He is not a good person.
No. So he's not a person.
He is trash. You're right. I've already said it. So, in total, what his sentencing... Would you like to guess how many years it is that he's supposed to serve?
Swear to God, if it's any less... How old is he at this point?
Right 40? Now, he's like 41 at the time of his sentencing.
If it's any less than 93, I'm going to be pissed.
I was just talking about how many years he got total. So he got way more than 93 years.
Okay.
He got, so in total, when it's kind of added up and looked at it in the term of how many years over those life terms, the math adds up to 2020 years that he is to serve. So Devlin was transferred to the Western Missouri Correctional Center in Cameron, Missouri. He will not be eligible for parole. You got your wish here. He will not be eligible for parole until he is 100 years old, from what sources stated.
Still too young, but I'll take it.
Hopefully he's just the bucket by then.
Hopefully the prisoners take care of
him. Well, now that you mention it.
Am I just getting everything I want in this episode? No, is it Christmas?
You're not. Oh. No, because he's still alive. While in custody, he was reportedly attacked. Sources called it with an ice pick. It was a makeshift pick that was made from the metal guide parts from a typewriter.
Oh no, that's horrible.
The inmate that attacked him was reportedly named Troy L. Fenton, and I'm gonna give Troy credit, because when police ordered Fenton to stop, he was cooperative with police. Got on his stomach, hands up. He was being investigated, obviously, for charges for the assault against Devlin, but it was a targeted attack. So he essentially was like, what Devlin did made me sick. And yeah. So because of that, Devlin is in protective custody.
Dang. So, Troy.
Well, Troy tried. Okay.
Look, I ain't mad at Troy. I just gotta say, I don't know what he did. Okay, like, I understand he's in there for a reason, but
you're
like,
not mad at him about this.
Yeah, this situation. You know what? It would have been hard for me to not look the other way,
right?
To just be like, you know what? Just get three more in. Hurry up! People are coming. I gotta do my job.
Yeah. So he is in protective custody, and he will be. Remainder of his time in prison. Now, since his incarceration, Devlin has actually become a suspect in 5 other cases of missing boys. However, there has been no physical evidence that links him to those cases yet.
I'm guessing he's not talking.
No. The families of those boys are like, you're already in there for life. What's another 20 years? What's another 10 years? Just tell us and we can have closure.
Because this is the only power these sick people have. Like, that's all it is. He gets off on this, and it's disgusting. So, because I'm of that same mindset. Like, just tell them.
Yeah. Anyways, okay, so that is Michael Devlin. Not a good person.
I hate him.
Nobody likes him.
Hey, buddy. I know you're upset because your eye can't open, huh? Oh, I know you're trying so hard, but it's got bloopers.
That was a short nap. I just
hate the way he looked. I hate his eyes. I hate his face.
You hate him.
Yeah.
I mean, whether he was Ted Bundy or not, like, look-wise, we still hate him.
It's just something about his eyes. Like, this is a picture, and his eyes are just so cold and heartless. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So let's go on to something a little bit different. Because in 2013, Sean was interviewed, and in the interview, he talked about how he survived. He stated, quote, I knew my family was out there and they would never give up. And I'm sure these girls felt the same way. I mean, you just have to hold on to your life because you don't, if you don't, you're just going to be lost within yourself and you can't have that. And so he's referencing at the time, it was a recent rescue of 3 Cleveland girls that had been held captive for 10 years. So he was talking about that and how he's like, wow, I'm sure the girls felt the same way. He also stated, quote, when missing children are found, it doesn't necessarily bring back bad memories for me from his years under the control of his captor, Michael Devlin. Instead, he says it brings good memories of the day police walked him into a room to be reunited with his parents.
Oh.
So he's told people he's been able to put his abduction behind him. He knows mm-hmm. it's a part of his past, but he has his family to help him with his recovery, which has made him very strong. He has gotten tattoos on his arm that reads, one says faith, the other says respect. Sean would state to others, you can't give up. You have to stay strong the whole time, and you have to just have that strength and just know one day you will be reunited with your family. Since Sean he's married, he is a father now. From what I could find, he's just trying to live a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, due to lack of funding, Sean Hornbeck Foundation would close its doors, but members would help to found the Missouri Valley Search and Rescue Team. So they're still doing good things. It's just that specific organization didn't have the funding they needed. Ben Ownby, I couldn't find a lot about him. From what I could find, he's just trying to live a normal life.
I hope they both have that. Like, they absolutely deserve it.
Yeah. Now, one more thing that was kind of interesting, and I can't remember if either of us have claimed the Golden State Killer yet on the spreadsheet. I don't remember. So. I think you have it. I think you have it claimed.
I do?
I think so. Well, I swear for a while it was claimed. But maybe that was really early on when we had Brie around and she had it claimed. Golden. It's not claimed right now, but I think it had been at one point.
Okay.
Anyways, so this is just something I found interesting. Michelle McNamara. She's an investigative journalist. That's what I'm calling her. She actually connected Ben Ownby's abduction to Sean Hornbeck's disappearance the day before they were found. So she had a blog, and on the 11th of January, 2007, she actually wrote on her blog about connections that she had seen between the two boys. Now, keep in mind, at this point, when she had made this connection, Ben Ownby, he was all over the news because it was fresh. Sean's case was a cold case.
How did she do that?
She's very detail oriented. She was finding a lot of really small details, and she was able to she was connected the dots. And
is she an investigator of some kind? Because she needs to be.
Well, I believe she's passed away, but this is what she wrote on her blog. So this was the day before, and she said, one intriguing lead investigator should examine is a similar disappearance 4 years ago and 38 miles from Beaufort. On October 6, 2002, Sean Hornbeck left home on his bicycle in the rural area of Richwoods, Missouri. Though Ben was just 2 years older than Sean, he looked young for his age, and both boys have strikingly similar stats. Sean was 4'8" and 90 pounds, 2 inches shorter, and 10 pounds lighter than Ben. So she called it. And she also has a book called I'll Be Gone in the Dark that focused on the Golden State Killer, who obviously we all know at this time has been caught. At the time she wrote the book, I think he had not been caught, because from what I had read, she had passed away a couple months before he was arrested. I did want to call out that was something I thought was pretty impressive. Let me look at when she actually passed, because like I said, the sources I had, I don't remember them giving me a specific date. She passed away on April 21st, 2016. It might have actually been a couple years before he was caught, because I think the Golden State Killer was arrested in 2018. I'm pretty confident, because I had to look it up to see what year he was arrested earlier. So she released that book. I just want to, like, I wanted to call her out because I was like, that is absolutely impressive.
Yeah.
She should be an investigator.
Mm-hmm.
But
or at the very least, like a what do you call it? The people that the investigators like an they'll go expert. Talk to. Yes, like an expert or
something. Yeah. So but that is the case for Sean Hornbeck and Ben Ownby. I wanted something with at least a happy ending in the sense that they were both safe while they did endure trauma. They are able to move past it. I don't want to call it safe past it. They're able to move forward with it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I hope nothing bad ever happens to them. Like, at all.
Right?
Like, even red lights. I hope they don't ever get a red light. Ugh. Okay. So, are you ready for my story? Because I did this one specifically for you.
Oh, specifically for me?
Mm-hmm.
I am ready.
This is a story about twins.
Oh.
Yeah.
About now, twins! Oh, he must have gotten out.
These are identical twins. Specifically, the Gibbon sisters, or the Silent Twins. Now, I want to, like, off the rip, I got a ridiculous amount of info from an article from the New Yorker, and it's called We Two Made One. This article was so good. It's written by Hilton Owls, and he actually spoke with one of the sisters. And I also got some more information, a lot more information, from a BBC interview with that same sister. I had other sources, but those were the two that I got a lot of info from. And the New Yorker article, it is a long read. So, and it's one of those that, like, I think you can view, like, one article before you hit a payroll. So definitely read it, but definitely, like, I mean, pay them because it's worth it. But if not, then sit down when you have time to read. Anyway, sorry. So this is my story on the Gibbon sisters. And it starts with two Caribbean immigrants, Gloria and Aubrey Gibbons. They moved to the UK in the early 1960s. Gloria was a housewife, and Aubrey was a technician in the Royal Air Force. Together, they had five children. They had Greta in 1957, David in 1959. Their twinnies, as they called them, June and Jennifer, were born in 1963. And Rose, or Rosie, as I sometimes saw her called, was born in 1967. So in 1963, Aubrey was stationed in Yemen. So Gloria gave birth to the twins at a military hospital in Aden. June was born first, and Jennifer came along 10 minutes later. Not long after, the family relocated to England, and in 1974, they settled in Haverford West, Wales. Now, growing up, the twins, I mean, they're twins. They were close. They had their own language, and nobody understood them, not even their parents. So they kind of just stopped talking to people, and they would only talk to each other and their little sister, Rose. This did not get better. Unfortunately, the girls had a deeply traumatic school experience. The Gibbons family was the only people of color in their community. So they and the girls, the twins specifically, they would be targeted. And in school, June and Jennifer were tormented. I mean, those are my words, but they people called them names. They were always picking on them and bullying them. Some reports said that kids would pull their hair, like pull it so hard they'd pull it out of their head. They were ostracized, and this is by students and teachers. And it got so bad that they were actually dismissed early in an attempt to avoid bullying by other students. Because they were, I guess the hope was that they would be, you know, it was a head start to get home for the day.
Which is sad because they shouldn't have needed that.
That's heartbreaking. Like, how about you just punish the bullies? I don't know. I'm not a parent that's ever had to deal with this. Hopefully I'm not, but I don't. It almost feels like they are being punished. for this. Yeah. And I will say right now, like, I did kind of touch on it by saying they were the only people of color in the community. Race played into this a lot as well. So that also added to their trauma. But eventually they already didn't talk to many other people. Eventually they stopped talking to anybody but themselves and Rose. They stopped even looking at people. It was said that they would just kind of look down the whole time. And while this deepened their bond to one another, it also pushed them farther into their isolation. So they become more reserved, almost to the point where they kind of only had each other. And it was said that they would swap places with each other. And I went to school with at least one set of twins. One set of twins I remember distinctly in school. They were identical twins. I couldn't tell them apart. They were constantly having to tell me who was who. But they would, like, they would switch places. And, like, one of them didn't study for their history test, so the other one would go take the history test and stuff like that. You know, like, parent trap thing. Twin thing. Mm-hmm. Just twinning thing.
Guys, my twins won't be doing this, because when the moment they try to do it the first time, their teacher's going to be like, Leo, why are you sitting at JJ's desk?
Yeah, sorry, guys. Fraternal doesn't work.
I'm sorry. If you ask my mom, they don't even look like brothers right now.
The problem with June and Jennifer, this wasn't the type of swapping that they would do. So one day they would wake up and they would just be each other. It was said that Jennifer would tell June, I am June. I am June. Well, it was said that they would argue. June would be like, no, I am June. And even though Jennifer was younger, she was said to be the more dominant of the two. And it was frequently stated that she almost had sort of like a control over June. So they would end up switching and they would be the other one for days. And eventually one would tell the other one, give me back myself. If you give me back myself, I'll give you back yourself. And then they would switch again. And June would be herself, and Jennifer would be her.
That's too much. I can barely be myself. I don't want to be someone else.
That was like, reading that was like, that gave me goosebumps. They started mirroring each other's movements too, and one source stated that they really enjoyed riding horses. And while they were riding, if one girl fell off the horse, the other one would fall off shortly after. Another source stated that if one girl was doing something, then the other one would come up and finish what she was doing. And when they walked places, they would walk one behind the other with their heads down and their feet would be in sync. So it was bordering on like really creepy. They continued their schooling, but they refused to read or write. And in 1976, a nurse was at the school vaccinating children against tuberculosis, lucky. And he noticed the twins' strange behavior, and he notified a child psychologist. And he claimed that why he noticed the girls is that they were almost doll-like. And he said when he was vaccinating and giving them a shot, it was like they were in a trance. They didn't react to the needle at all. And first it was just the one girl, and he was like, well, that was really weird. And then the other one that looks just like her comes up and reacted the exact same way. The nurse told a child psychologist about the girls, and he was unable, this child psychiatrist started working with him. He was unable to get him to speak, and it was said that he couldn't even tell the difference between them. And so to me, it feels like he kind of pushed them off. He referred them to the chief speech pathologist of Withybush Hospital. And her name is Anne Treharne.
Did you call it Withybush Hospital?
Withybush.
Withy, okay.
Yeah. I know, I really like that name. Anne Treharne, she started treatment in February of 1977. And they very, very, very rarely spoke around her. They did not speak to her. And she did eventually get them to agree to them reading out loud and being recorded while she left the room. And through listening to these recordings, by listening to these recordings, she discovered that their own language that no one could understand, it was actually a mixture of English and Barbadian slang. And they spoke it really, really quickly. And it also was said that they had like a West Indian accent. So instead of an S, they would say like they would pronounce words with an SH sound. So with all of this mixed, so they didn't really create their own language. They were speaking in their native languages. It's just, it was just really quickly with an accent. Now, Anne, she did say that she felt like June wanted to talk to her, but she said that Jennifer stopped her with what she called eye signals. And she said that Jennifer would just sit there with no expression on her face, but Anne could still feel her power. And she said it led her to the conclusion that June was possessed by Jennifer. And June would later talk about this too, and June said that they called it eye language, where they would just communicate with nothing but their eyes, and they would just know what the other one was thinking. Eventually, all these medical professionals that were working with the girls, they got together. Professionals, yes. They got together. They sent the girls to Eastgate Center for Special Education. And it was said that the girls did a little better here, but they still weren't really talking to people or meeting eye contact. They were still heavily avoiding eye contact. So in 1977, when the girls were 14 years old, they were separated. Jennifer stayed at Eastgate, and June was sent to St. David's Adolescent Unit, 30 miles away. And this was allegedly a really controversial decision. Their medical professionals did not agree on this, but they were all worried that if the girls didn't learn to have a distinct identity and personality, that they weren't going to flourish in life and they wouldn't have a future. They needed to learn how to be apart from each other. Well, the separation did not help. It was catastrophic. Feels like a good word. When they were first told that they were going to be separated, they lost it. And they lost it on each other. It was said that June and Jennifer screamed. They hit each other. Jennifer dug her nails into June's cheek. And June pulled a clump of hair out of Jennifer's head. And then the two girls ran out of the office screaming and fighting. They had to be physically separated by nurses.
Damn.
Yeah. They were not happy, and they were especially not happy with each other.
And which June kind of make sense to me.
I was hoping you would say that. So June, she said that around this time they were desperate and they were trapped in their twinship and their language. So it was like they couldn't. It was almost like they couldn't be together, but they couldn't be apart either because they didn't have anybody else. But I mean, you're married. You get it. How does it feel being with somebody 24/7?
Hey, JJ, you're a lot 24/7.
So they started calling after this happened, after they were told that they were going to be separated. They started calling medical staff on the phone and they promised that they would talk during their therapy session if they were allowed to stay together. And they actually talked on the phone with their therapist for a long time. He said he had a long conversation with them.
Well, that's kind of sad, too. But they're so desperate. They're like, we'll do what you want. We'll do whatever you want to stay together.
Mm-hmm. And from what it sounded like he was like willing to, he was like, okay, we can try this. But when their sessions came, they were still the quiet, catatonic girls. Like, nothing really changed. So, in March of 1978, they were separated, and they did not take this well. June stopped eating and even moving, and she was reported to just be dead weight. It took two people to get her out of her bed, and even once they got her out of bed, all they really did was prop her up against the wall because she would not move at all.
That is one hell of a codependency.
Yeah. Which they did. They separated them when they were March 78, 14. They would still be about 14 years old. So feels kind of late to be doing that. But I also kind of understand, you know, like if they were at like what we've tried everything out, what else can we do?
Mm-hmm.
But another thing that was sad was I read that, and this isn't in my notes, so I'm just going to wing it here. I read that their parents tried to get them help, but when it come to like separating them and stuff like that, they weren't even like involved in the process. They weren't really asked. They weren't really kept up on things. It was almost like they were just told after the fact. So they were kind of just told like, all right, this is what we're going to do. And they're like, I mean, okay, I guess.
I mean, I get it where it's like, I'm trusting the medical professionals, but also keep me in the loop. Don't tell me afterwards.
Yes, because this kind of worked against June and Jennifer too, because later on they would say they kind of felt like their parents abandoned them. When really, from their parents' point of view, Aubrey specifically, it sounded like he didn't really have much of a say. Because they were trusting the doctors, but like you said, keep me in the loop. So the separation, it did not last, and they were reunited. And in late 1979, they quit school at the age of 16. And from what I read, it kind of sounded like school quit them because they were given unemployment benefits. They did draw unemployment benefits because they were seen as like, you're not going to have a future anyway. You're not going to be able to do anything in the workforce. So why are you still in school? What's the point? By this time, the age of 16, they would only eat in their room. They only spoke to each other and Rose. And when they did need to communicate with other people, they would write notes and do it that way. And multiple sources said that to entertain themselves, they would play with dolls. Bryce, play with dolls does not feel accurate to me either.
How are you not accurately playing with a doll?
They were accurately playing with dolls. I feel like I was not.
Oh, okay.
Because they made their own world with these dolls in their bedroom. It was said that most of the doll kids were twins. They had elaborate names. So they had Anne Marie Esther Kingston. They had Billy Ho Haynes are two examples.
I love Billy Ho Haynes.
I love Billy Ho Haynes. Rosie was the official registrar, and she recorded the deaths of these dolls, and I have a couple of examples. Would you like to know?
Were any of them hit by a train?
No.
Oh, okay. I was my imaginary friends. Boyfriend, whatever. I was apparently doing that wrong.
I feel like you were on the right track. So they did have a Gibbons family with their dolls. And these are what happened to some of the Gibbons. June Gibbons, the doll, was aged 9 when she died of a leg injury. George Gibbons was aged 4 when he died of eczema. Bluey eczema? Gibbons.
Can yes. Can you die of eczema?
I don't know, but if you can, that's horrible.
Hold on.
Are you Googling it?
Eczema cause death. No, eczema is not a fatal condition. Okay.
Well, tell that to George Gibbons.
Oh, but they can experience complications that can lead to health problems, including infections and cardiovascular.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Technically, no, eczema that makes sense. Not, but it can cause bigger issues.
Okay. Bluey Gibbons He, I don't know, it doesn't say. Age 2.5, died of appendix. That's all it says. I guess at birth. I don't know. Peter Gibbons was 5. It says adopted. Presumed dead. I don't know if that means he was adopted when he was dead. Or I don't know. You would have to ask the registrar.
I'm afraid to ask the registrar.
Julie Gibbons was 2.5. She died of a stamped stomach. I don't know what that was. And finally, Polly Morgan Gibbons was 4. Died of a slit face, and Susie Pope Gibbons died the same time of a cracked skull.
Who is slitting faces? Who is cracking skulls?
I would like to know the difference.
Well, slit face, cracked skull. It's position, come on.
But your face is still your skull, technically, right? Or is the skull just the top?
I mean, I would consider the skull, like, hairline back, essentially. Like, I know there's more to it. But yeah. When talking in this context, the face is the skin, the skull is, if you're lucky, where the hair is. If you're Cody, there's no hair, there's no distinguishing factor, it's all skull.
Okay, I see. I'm being too technical, I think.
Okay. I think so.
For Christmas in 1979, they were given diaries by their mother. And this paved the path for their future as writers. They loved these. They wrote all the time in their diary. They took a mail order course in creative writing. They registered as one person, which I found interesting.
Surprised me.
They filled the pages of their diaries with not just, you know, diary entries. They also filled them with poems and novels, stories. A lot of these took place in the U.S., Malibu, California, and Philadelphia. They involved young men or women who either acted strangely or committed crimes. When she was 16, June wrote a novel that she called The Pepsi Cola Addict. And she convinced Jennifer to save money from their unemployment benefits. And together, they got this book published in 1982.
Okay, when they were, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, like I do want to read this book too. When they turned 18, and not book, maybe story would be more, I don't want to say short story, but it's not a full book, I don't. When they turned 18, they tracked down a student they knew from Eastgate named Lance Kennedy. He was an American boy, and he stood up for him when people bullied him. His family lived in Welsh Hook, and the girls didn't realize it at the time, but Lance was already living in Philadelphia, so he wasn't living in Wales anymore. Regardless, they saved up their money, they took a taxi to his home, and nobody was home at the time, but they noticed the door was unlocked. So they went inside and made peanut butter sandwiches, ate them. They looked at the pictures of the family on the walls.
Do not enter my home whether my door is unlocked or not. No. That's my peanut. You better hope that's not the dog peanut butter, okay? Because we double dip after the dog licks things on the dog peanut butter. Okay? I know which one's the dog peanut butter and which one's not. So don't be coming into my house and making yourself at home.
They looked through their photographs. They went through the clothes of the three remaining sons in the house. They broke the door on one of the bedrooms.
Okay, Goldilocks and the Three Bears here.
When Mr. Kennedy and his wife, who was the boy's stepmom, came home and caught the girls, they refused to talk. They wouldn't look at them. They kind of just, I mean, you know, they still weren't talking to people. They weren't really making eye contact. And Mr. Kennedy and, I mean, assumed Miss Kennedy, Mrs. Kennedy, they took pity on them. So they just let them go. But the twins kept going back to Welsh Hook. June said that they would get all dressed up. They would put on makeup. They would wear short skirts and high heels. They would get these long brown wigs and sunglasses, lipstick. And all of this was in an attempt to meet the boys and get them to like them. And they did. They eventually met the Kennedy boys. And they all started hanging out. They started what June described as their summer. And the girls, along with these boys, they would drink, they sniffed glue and lighter fluid, they smoked weed, and yeah, they really went like 0 to 100.
They were like, no, I'm not playing around.
We gotta go. Like, I got lost time to report. Under these influences, though, they would talk and laugh and be quote unquote normal. So I guess, you know, sounds pretty par for the course. When their inhibitions are lowered, they would let down their guard. Okay. Jennifer lost her virginity to the youngest Kennedy son, who was about 14 at the time. And she wrote in her diary, "Dear Diary, one of the best days of my sweet life. I lost my beautiful virginity to Carl Kennedy." This is not his real name, by the way. "At last. It hurt a lot, but it happened. There was lots of blood. We did it in church. Sorry, God. Your friend, Jenny."
Church?
In front of God and June. June was there.
Watching. June, girl, no.
And she wrote in her diary, "Something like magic is happening. I'm seeing Jennifer for the first time like she is seeing me. I think she is slow, cold, has no respect, and talks too much. But she thinks I am the same. We're both holding each other back. There's a murderous gleam in her eye. Dear Lord, I'm scared of her. She is not normal. She's having a nervous breakdown. Someone is driving her insane. It is me."
Man.
Just short of 2 weeks after Jennifer lost her virginity to the youngest Kennedy son, June did the same in their... Jennifer did the... Or, I'm sorry. June did the same and lost her virginity in the Kennedy's barn.
You don't be going to lose virginities in barns. We keep those locked up.
Or churches. Don't do it in a church either. Yeah, that's weird.
Do it in a church. Do it when you're 59 years old in your own bed.
Yes. And married.
Preferably.
But when the boys moved to America at the end of the summer, the girls were left with each other again. But they were, if you couldn't tell from the diary entries, starting to hate each other.
I mean, I don't like my siblings either.
And yeah, I read somewhere that like me and my siblings didn't get along growing up. But when I looked at my sibling, I wasn't looking at myself either.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So June wrote in her diary, "Jay," meaning Jennifer, "and I are like lovers, a love-hate relationship. She thinks I am weak. She knows not how I fear her. This makes me feel more weak. I want to be strong enough to split from her. Oh, Lord, help me. I am in despair." And Jennifer wrote in her diary, "She should have died at birth. Cain killed Abel. No twin should forget that." And in another entry, she wrote, "Jay," meaning June, "can't be my real twin. My real twin was born the exact same as me. Has my rising sign, my looks, my ways, my dreams, my ambitions. He or she will have my weaknesses, failures, opinion. All of this makes a twin. No differences. I can't stand differences."
Hey, buddy, I'm going to tell you right now, there's differences. And mommy needs those differences so she doesn't lose her shit on you guys. You hear?
Remember that. Regardless, they started committing small crimes together. Because
for two people that hate each other so much, they're doing a lot of shit they shouldn't be.
I mean, I agree, but it also kind of makes sense because they were, from what I read, they had a lot of hate, and this is how they expressed it. They started ding-dong ditching, and they
That's not illegal.
They would steal bicycles.
That's illegal.
They would steal glue.
That's a weird one.
Well, they were huffing glue.
I mean, it's still weird.
They broke into buildings. One of them was a school. They smashed windows. They graffitied the walls. this is Bryce's peak here. They stole books.
Oh, I'm in. What book? What Barnes and Noble is getting up this weekend?
They tried to break a payphone, and when they couldn't, they called the police and confessed instead. But then they ran away before the police got there.
I tried to break a payphone, but then I couldn't do it. I was too weak.
So I called the police, and I was like, come get me, and then ran away. So they basically ding-dong ditched the police.
I mean, sure.
So from breaking into places, they started lighting buildings on fire with Molotov cocktails.
Guys, that's a little excessive.
They burned down a tractor store.
Look, we only need the bookstore, okay? We don't need to worry about schools, Molotov. You can't throw a Molotov cocktail in a bookstore.
Well, they didn't, to my knowledge.
I know, but I'm just saying, there's no need for it. All we need to do is go to the bookstore. Leave the Molotov cocktails at home.
Ooh. Excuse me. On November 8th, they were caught starting a fire at Pembroke Technical College. They were arrested. And, you know those journals they were constantly writing in?
Where they're constantly confessing what they're doing, yeah?
Yeah, police got them and found every detail of their crimes documented in these diaries. So they were very arrested. And they shared a cell together. And God, their resentment...
You need to stop making them share shit.
Well, there. Now, I will say there was a couple times, and I think I touch on this again later, that they were separated. And it's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. When they were separated, they did bad. But when they were together,
they still did bad.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I talk about that right now, actually. Look at me go. So their resentment towards each other grew. When they were together, they wanted to kill each other. And when they were apart, they wanted to die of loneliness. And then when you put them back together again, they were just kind of like, why did I even feel that way in the first place?
They're like, damn, I forgot why I didn't like you. Don't worry, for my siblings, I haven't forgotten.
I still remember every detail.
I remember having to share a room with my sister. Absolutely not. But should June that be resentment wrote, towards my sister or my parents?
Both? But Dad, different resentment.
Dad, how dare you make me share a room growing up? Didn't build character. I don't want to hear it.
Oh, it built character. Just not the right one. June wrote in her diary that they still kept because they didn't learn their lesson. One of us is plotting to kill the other. A thud on the head on a cool evening, dragging the lifeless body, digging a secret grave. I'm in a dangerous situation.
Situation.
I cannot Today? Speak. Ever.
Okay.
I'm in a dangerous situation. A scheming, insidious plot. How will it end? I'm in enslavement to her. This creature who lounges in this cell, who is with me every hour of my living soul.
You choose that life.
I mean, yeah. I do feel like they are really good writers, though.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying don't whine. Or else someone will give you something to whine about, and it's going to be your sister.
Yeah, I think that happened. Yeah, I think you pegged them. Boy, you know a lot about twins. Do you have some?
No. Not like this.
Okay, yeah, no, not like this.
Look, all mine did was share a womb. Okay, they don't share DNA.
But do they share a room? Wait, did you just say they don't share DNA?
I meant I'm like pretty exact sure. DNA. They don't share that the just, exact same DNA.
That went right over my head and I was like, I grabbed it and I was like, wait, come back.
You reeled it back in.
Yeah.
I just meant the exact same. They don't have the same DNA. Okay. They share DNA. I'm so sorry that I misspoke. I was gonna see if you were gonna catch on because I caught on pretty quick and was like, wait.
Maybe it's too late. It was already out there.
Maybe she'll breeze past it.
I did, but I came back around.
Yeah.
I caught the train and took the loop.
I was trying to say mine don't share the same DNA nor the same face.
Okay. Gotcha. Maybe that'll help then.
Look, you guys are going to have to share a room for a while, but I will make sure you guys are socialized better than just each other.
Okay.
There are dogs to socialize with in this house, too.
Now, while they were awaiting trial, their defense lawyer had them evaluated. And the psychiatrist that evaluated them recommended that they be sent to Broadmoor. I don't know if you've ever heard of Broadmoor. It's like the Alcatraz of England. No other hospital would agree to take the girls because of their history of arson. And Broadmoor, where they were sent, was a maximum security hospital for the criminally insane. I'm pretty sure it's still open today. Pretty sure they do not say criminally insane. I'm not really sure. I don't think that's PC anymore.
They say it behind closed doors.
Oh, absolutely they do.
Like George in room 304A, criminally insane.
Criminally insane. It's criminal how insane.
Did you realize that he wears short shorts with socks and sandals? I don't know.
Are the shorts white after Labor Day? Because that's where I draw the line.
Criminal.
Absolutely. When the girls were tried and sent to Broadmoor, they were 19 years old. They pled guilty at the behest of their lawyer to 16 counts of burglary, theft, and arson. Now, according to June, the psychiatrist told these two 19-year-old girls that they were going to take them to a hospital for quote-unquote people like them. People who were psychopaths. And June said that she knew she wasn't a psychopath, but this quack, this psychiatrist, he told them that there was work that they could do at this place. They had parties, they had discos. So these two teenage girls were like, oh, cool, this is going to be fun. She said they thought it was going to be like a vacation. They were excited to go here. So they pled guilty. And the girls were expecting to spend about 6 months at this hospital. They were sentenced to stay there indefinitely. And again, they were 19. The youngest person in Broadmoor when they were sentenced was 27 years old.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Not anymore. Make way.
And they were like the worst of the worst in this too. So they were separated again for a while when they got there. And within days, June was lethargic. Within weeks, she attempted suicide. She didn't speak for a month. And after that, she answered questions with what was described as an infuriating smile. Jennifer, on the other hand, attacked a nurse.
Infuriating smile.
I don't know, but I want someone to show me.
I need to learn. Know what it is so badly.
I need to know with every fiber of my being.
What is an infuriating? Like, is it just like you smile? I don't understand what an Cody, do you know what an infuriating smile might be? What is it?
When they smile, but the smile's malicious.
He said it's when they smile, but it's malicious.
I have one of those.
Like I just shit in your Cheerios. And I'm like, yeah, I shit your Cheerios.
Oh, like he just shit in your Cheerios. And he's like, oh, yeah, I just shit in your Cheerios. I'll Cheerio about it.
I can do that. Okay. I had a coworker tell me the other day I gave her a mischievous smile. And I was like, oh, no, this is just my face.
No, that's just what happens when you look at me. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, that's just me. Just mischievous girl thing. Jennifer, on the other hand, she attacked a nurse. Nobody could understand her when she did try to talk. They gave her Depazole regularly, which is an antipsychotic that made her vision blurry. It made it really difficult for her to read or write or see. And June was also given different medication. When they were originally sentenced here, it was said that they were not going to be given any medicine, and that apparently did not last long. every few years. No, unfortunately. Every few years in Broadmoor, their case would be reviewed. And every few years, they would be told that they had to stay by the doctors who reviewed it. Even when they started talking regularly, like they started speaking to other people because they knew we're not going to get out of here if we don't start talking to people. Still, the doctors kept them there for 12 years.
Damn. Were they separated for a good part of that?
Some of the time they were separated. Some of the time they were together. I don't believe they ever shared a room. June did mention at one point that they shared a ward and they would just fight every time they saw each other. So they would end up separated. But she also talks about, you know, she had regular contact with her sister there. So I feel like it was just a back and forth. So they were there for 12 years. Now enter Marjorie Wallace, who is the woman in the photo with them. She, at the time, was a reporter for the London Sunday Times, and she heard their story, and she became their biggest supporter. After gaining the trust of Gloria and Aubrey, she read their diaries, and instead of psychopaths, she saw two little girls that only had each other in a very traumatic and lonely life. And she fought to clear the stigma around them and advocated for their mental health. And in June, no, that's a woman. Sorry, in March 1993, June and Jennifer were released. June
is also a month, though.
It is, but it's not the month I wanted at this moment. Or ever. June's hot. It's a hot month. I don't like it.
Okay.
In March of 1993, June and Jennifer were released from Broadmoor. They were sent to Caswell Clinic, a minimum security institution in Southwest Wales. And on the bus ride there, Jennifer rested her head on June's shoulder and told her sister, at long last, we are out. Not even 12 hours later, Jennifer died from an undiagnosed heart inflammation, is what it said. The unofficial cause of death was said to be major swelling around her heart, even though she was said to be healthy. This came out of nowhere. It's still a mystery how this happened. June was released a year later. She prefers to go by Allison, her middle name, because she said it's a fresh start, and the name June brought her more than grief. And when June was asked, do you still write? She said, it seems to me that as I get older, I don't want to write anymore. I don't see the point in writing books now. I can communicate by talking now, can I? Jennifer is buried in St. Martin's Cemetery, Haverford West Wales. On her graveyard is a poem written by June. And it says, we once were two, we two made one. We no more two, though life be one. Rest in peace. And I did want to say, I found it really commonly reported that Jennifer, quote unquote, died for June because they made a pact with one another that one could only talk if the other one died. That was false. It come from a movie that was written about them called The Silent Twins, which from what I could tell was still a pretty good movie, but you know, you got to Hollywoodize it. And for your specific interest, Bryce, June did say that when she was in Broadmoor, she read thousands of books. Easily, I mean, thousands.
She was probably the reason they were hitting up bookstores.
Yes.
I'll be there, girl. Tell me date, mm-hmm. time. I might not be able to escape is the issue. My hands are too full. Can we? Okay, even better. Can we jack the truck the books are on
before they get to the store? I don't know if she can drive, so you would be in charge of that.
That's fine. I can drive. I just need her assistance.
Okay. Yeah, she'd probably be down for that.
Okay. We don't even need all the books because there's going to be multiple copies of things, right?
Yeah, and she's probably already read them anyway.
Yeah, so we just need one copy of everything. We're fine.
Okay.
Done.
So that's the story of the Silent Twins or the Gibbons sisters.
I'm going to be honest, they're creepy. I'm sorry, but Leo, JJ, don't do that shit. I already don't want you guys to have a secret language that I don't understand. I need you guys to talk to me. I am your mother. I created you with my body.
I went on a little bit of a rabbit hole. It is wildly common for twins to create their own language.
I know it's pretty common, okay? I know. That is why I'm already protesting it.
Just making sure.
I know. I just need to convince them to let me in on the secret language.
Oh, well then just give them candy.
The issue I'm concerned about is that their secret language is going to start before I realize that it's a secret language.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's going to
start before they're speaking English. Like, their secret language comes first because that's how they communicate with each other. And then comes the language to me. That's where I'm concerned.
What if they're, like, reincarnated and they start speaking, like, Yiddish or Polish or something?
Absolutely not. Get the hell out of my house, you demon.
That's Latin, ma'am.
I can't do it, okay? Now, if they start speaking Spanish fluently and I'm sitting there, I'm concerned, okay? I'm a little less concerned, but I'm concerned, okay? Can you imagine Annie just looking at you and being like, yo también? I don't know what that means. I just know the words.
I would like be like, I don't know what I would say. Like, por qué? Por favor?
Inglés, por favor. No speak the Spanish.
No hablo español. Muy pequeño.
No. Un poco, I don't know. I'm just throwing words I can remember.
Un sacapuntas. I don't.
You'll hear her under her breath just calling. She's like, dang it, this jefe.
I know that one. How do you say time out in Spanish? Someone tell me.
You're going to be going, hey, Google. Hey, Siri. How do you say time out in Spanish?
That is tiempo de espera.
Tiempo de espera. Yeah.
I would have to see it.
Tiempo de
tiempo
espera.
Espera.
Tiempo de espera. You can just Google it. I just Siri that. That's the shit you're gonna
do. I got something completely different.
What'd you get?
Se acabó el tiempo.
Okay, someone that speaks Spanish, tell us how you say time out in Spanish. Dad, yeah. Not you. Dad, not you. Do you hear me, Dad? Not you. You don't speak Spanish. I will call Grandma. I will fact check your ass. And then I'll make up the lie about you. And I'll say, Grandma, did you hear what Dad did? He's so rude.
He tried to put the babies in timeout.
Yeah, and that's why I'm asking what timeout means. Or how to say timeout, I should say. Dad, don't start. Maybe I should just call my grandma this weekend and be like, how do you say timeout in Spanish?
Yeah, just get ahead of the game.
What's even better is my parents are down visiting my grandma. I should just tell her to send him to timeout.
Perfect.
What has he done recently where I can tattletale on him?
I thought you were going to make something up.
I'm trying to at least make it somewhat truthful. Maybe I can exaggerate it. You know, we did go to Topgolf. I'll tell my grandma he didn't let me win a game.
I feel like that's an accurate statement.
I actually think I beat my brother on a couple things. Thank you all for listening to Helen Heels Podcast. See pictures from this episode. You can follow us on Instagram, Helen Heels Podcast, X Helen Heels Pod, or Facebook by searching Helen Heels Podcast. You can find us on Linktree by searching Helen Heels Podcast Linktree. If you want to show support for us, please like, review, rate, share, and subscribe on your preferred listening platforms. If you want to take your support one step further so we can create additional content for you, you can donate through Patreon. We're working through these specials for our patrons. If you have your own true crime or paranormal story suggestions or words of encouragement, please email us at hellonheelspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to tell or report your friends to listen with you as well. Bye.
Bye.